With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hello and welcome back to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast where we examine the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. You are listening to Raw, Dylan B. Jones and Juno Dawson, 118 degrees. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Juno. I did enjoy when, because I always think of, look out for screen grabs to put on our Instagram. And I loved when there was a shot of when Samantha is at Raw and it's just her eyebrow raised over an open menu that just says Raw on it. And I was like, that's going to go on her Instagram.
Raw. I am always served at more than 118 degrees. and we have so much to discuss this week. But how are you? How are you, Dylan?
I'm good. Things are the weather's a bit warmer now. Although I'm fully, it could be a snowstorm next week or 30 degrees.
It could. I'm going to say it's, but I think, do you know what? Somebody the other day posted on Instagram that around any day now, the sun will be setting at 5 p.m.
Yeah, which is great.
Not 4 p.m. That's really nice. Yeah. I'm fully here for that.
Really nice.
Hurrah, spring. Spring is here again.
This was I had fun with this episode. It was a fun episode.
I had a lot of fun with this episode. Now, I will say, for me, the beginning of season six is a little bit slow to start.
Yes.
And I'm sure we will revisit this whinge as we move through the series. It's a very long season, which is, again, part of the reason why we're going to snap it in two.
Yeah.
So inevitably, there are some episodes which none of them are shit. But perhaps some of them are less iconic.
I'm just looking up how long... Yeah, it's 20 episodes long. So it is the longest
the
season.
The longest season, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say this was a timeless favourite. But, you know, I just sat and watched it with my husband and we both chortled in places. So before we get into it, Dylan, do you have a pot of Raw synopsis for us?
I have a... What was it? A key lime custard pot of synopsis. I love how they made
the
dishes.
Of lawn.
They made the dishes like deliberate. They were like, what are the most disgusting things we can think of? So Carrie and Berger are struggling because they are great everywhere but the bedroom. They find out. So it's about them navigating that. Miranda is doing SponCon for TiVo. Which actually is like, I wasn't mad at, to be honest, but we'll talk about that. Samantha, we meet Smith Jared, who turns out
Jerry Jared.
Now, oh yes, yes, and she christens him Smith Jared later. Jerry Jared, who works at the restaurant Raw, and we continue to follow Charlotte in her conversion to Judaism.
Of course.
Yeah.
Let's, as ever, start off with Carrie. God damn, I hate Berger so much. But I also really hated the line, the only thing better than the first bite of a burger
is a great day.
Is the first with someone like, but what?
Burger. It was at this
point.
You know they love a pun. They love a pun. And it was at this point that they were just like, let's just make puns about everything. Like when they were in Bed Bath & Beyond, he was like, wait until we go to the bed section. It's just like, what's happening?
But the thing is, what annoyed me is no one in the history of the world has ever said, God, things which are good, things which are good. I know, I've got it. The first bite of a hamburger.
No, yeah.
No said no that. One ever.
Like, a hamburger is, like, a very kind of staple thing. Like, you might say, like, the first bite of a amazing chocolate or something, but you wouldn't say a hamburger. And it's just so obvious. I don't know.
Do you know, as a little side thing, I left London when they opened the restaurant Bubble Dog, was gross hot dogs served with champagne. I can't get excited about greasy junk food as a genre. And that was when I left London, when all the real restaurants were closing down to be replaced by gourmet burger places. And not gourmet burger kitchen. This is not SponCon for gourmet burger kitchen. But you know, like kind of like they were just springing all over London, like Honest Burger and everywhere.
That place called The Diner. That's like a London chain.
Meat liquor. I think with their misogynist toilets.
I think that bubble has slightly burst now. I think now it's all about. I think people are a bit more switched on now when it comes to food. People learned a lot about food in lockdown, I think. So now people are a bit more discerning. There's lots of like.
There was a brief window there when people got very excited about burgers.
Yeah.
And it was just fucking shit piled between two bits of bread.
And you're charged 15 quid for the privilege, yeah.
In the meatpacking district last week, yeah. $20 for a burger, that's reasonable,
Oh, the worst is fucking charcoal bun. But no, I don't want my burger in a charcoal bun. I know you want me to put it on Instagram, but no.
So there are many things better than the first bite of a really great burger, including first time sex, which Karen Berger, and that was the bit Max and I were laughing at, which was the blood curdling sex scene with Berger rhythmically sort of sliding up and down and Carrie like some sort of loom,
and then Carrie just sort of does a sort of purses her lips a bit. It's just so uncomfortable. It's so great. Like, I know I always say it, but Sarah Jessica Parker is just so good at the awkward humour. So good. And then she puts it to the ladies. And what I love is when they're out having drinks. Oh no, they're out like waiting for the table at Raw. Mm-hmm. And Carrie like pointedly yawns and makes sure everyone sees her yawning. And they're all like, oh, what was happening? And she's like, oh, I don't want to talk about it.
Don't look at me, I'm shy.
Yeah, which is so Carrie. But then of course she fills them in on it.
Yeah, and it is tough. I mean, let's just get into it. Bad sex. Now this is, you know, we've gone six seasons in which Carrie, other than the jackhammer, the guy who physically wounded her on the eve of... Oh, no, we've not got to that yet.
No, we haven't. That's this season.
That is yet to come.
Yeah.
So, Carrie's having so much bad sex this year. But so actually, oh my God, I'm lost in the time warp of Sex and the City. But so within up until this point, Carrie has mostly had good sex.
Yeah.
Which leads us to think that Carrie, thank God, as a sex columnist, can at least, get herself off. Although she does say, worryingly, that, you know, she said in the past that she can only come if it's someone she really likes.
Yes.
Because Samantha tells her she needs to get that looked at.
Yeah.
And this time she tells Miranda that if it's a man she likes, she can always come. Which is very Caroline Bradshaw, isn't it? Which is, you know, actually your orgasm is activated from love. Not from anything else.
It's cerebral. It's because she's cerebral, you know, and it's all tied together. Yeah.
She's a sex columnist, but she would only have sex with someone she was in love with.
Yeah.
So she is surprised that Berger isn't getting her off because they have such wild sexual chemistry. in restaurants and in Bed Bath & Beyond. However, do you think Carrie's body knows on some level that burger is gross?
I noticed some post-it foreshadowing. Did you notice that?
Yes, he has the post-its in bed. I bet he was writing those to his most recent ex.
Yeah, he was
just
writing.
He has a pile of, sorry, I can't, don't hate me.
Just all around,
ready to go.
All around his laptop, ready to give to people. I don't know, bad sex. I mean, I thought it was, the portrayal of it was quite accurate. Because I have had, I'm sure all sexually active people have had bad sex.
I never have.
It's not possible. But you're very...
Because I invented it. I invented sex. So, you know, it's like Mary Berry doesn't get cake wrong. Like, of course I have had shit sex.
And neither you or Mary Berry ever get soggy bottoms.
Again, as Carrie says, that was uncalled for.
But it is the silence, like, and this is, I have had exactly this experience with a guy who I dated for a while ages ago when I was like, I think 18 or 19, and we were so good, like, we were, as Berger says, we were the couple you wanted to be, like, at parties and restaurants and stuff, and then it just didn't work. And I'm a bit more cynical than the ladies, even than Samantha. I think that kind of, maybe not always, but a lot of the time, there's nothing, if it's not good the first time, like, maybe give it a couple more chances, but, like, usually, if the chemistry's not there, it's just not there. What do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think that's too... cynical?
No, I think as Samantha notably says, quotably forever, fuck me badly once, shame on you, fuck me badly twice, shame on me.
Yeah.
And I think you'd always give somebody a couple of goes. Because I think Carrie's absolutely right. I think the first time is not representative of what it's gonna be like in the long run once you've really gotten to know someone.
Yeah.
But I think if it's fundamentally a mismatch, you would know after two or three times.
Mm.
There was one, there's two that really, really stick in my mind. One was a guy that I was quite seriously dating and it just didn't work. And I'm going to say, just bad, weird vibes. In that I think he was really nervous, so I was really nervous. And then it just spiraled. Very, very weird. And then the other one was a guy that I really, really fancied and I got really excited about him. But he just had no soul. He was, you know, he was... I think possibly I did mention
Is
the man with no soul.
The guy.
The TV producer. The TV did I talk about the TV producer before? Yeah.
Ages ago, yeah.
And that was the only time somebody has stopped Burger Style and he said, this just isn't working, is it? And I was really crushed because I was like, but I'm good at this. Like, I came away from that session thinking, I think it might be you.
Do you think that's your caveat though? So Carrie's caveat is that she has to like really like them. And your only caveat is they have to at the very least have a soul for you to enjoy sex with them.
My bare minimum, the stick is on the floor.
I mean,
but
that is the bare minimum.
That is kind of... But I would like them to have a soul. And I think what I've learned, so from the first guy, when I was quite young, I'd only just moved to Brighton. I think what I've learned now is you know if you fancy someone.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, in that instance, I just think possibly we didn't really fancy each other.
Mm.
I think it was one of those where we both really liked the idea of each other.
Mm.
But it wasn't so much about the throwdown, as Carrie says, as so much as the Zazazoo, as she has said. So that's interesting because Carrie, to use her crazy vocabulary, she does have the Zazazoo with Burger, but they don't seem to have the throwdown, which feels like almost like a practical consideration, which is that, I guess, you just have to compliment each other, I think, more than anything. You know, I don't think... I wouldn't be saying to people out there that, you know, we should all be rehearsing our moves. You know, it's not Strictly Come Dancing.
And I think that doesn't work either. Like, again, it comes back to, like, no matter how much you rehearse it, and in some ways that could make it feel even more staged and even more awkward if you're like, oh, and then we need to do this. Like, if you have to try and push it that hard, like, I don't think it's going to work, to be honest.
Well, that's what Carrie does wrong later in the episode. And so I can see why she thinks buying Marabou pumps and sort of sexy lingerie, I can see why she would think La Perla would be able to save the day. Uh-huh. But I loved Carrie acting sexy, because we've all done it. And there is nothing sexier than acting sexy.
When she was...
Because it was true of Samantha later on in the restaurant as well, which is... It's so transparent.
Yeah, I loved it when Carrie and Berger are in the... And this is towards the end of the episode, isn't it? Mm-hmm. When they're both getting drunk and she, like, sort of shimmies her boobs down towards the table.
She plops them on the table, yeah. Like, get a load of these.
And then when they're back at hers, you have said previously that SJP loved Ab Fab. It was very, very reminiscent of a scene in Ab Fab where Eddie sleeps with her gardener, who's played by Helena Bonham Carter's brother, weirdly, who's in that episode and nothing else. And she gets too stoned and, like, falls over and, like, hoiks her skirt up, like, exactly, it's almost exactly some of it, frame for frame. So it was really interesting. And I happened to watch that episode of Ab Fab the other day, so it was really interesting to see that.
I need to go back and watch that. I don't remember that. Mm. But yes, we know. So yes, Sarah Jessica Parker loves Jennifer Saunders.
Yeah.
So that fits. I loved it. I loved her not being able to get the skirt off, so she lifts it like some like creepy
and
flasher
she's, like,
lady.
Fiddling with the zip. She's like, I got something to show you.
She kicks a shoe in Berger's face. Oh, it's good stuff.
It's great.
But yes, no. It's difficult. You can't make yourself sexy. I just think people are either going to find you sexy or they're not.
Yeah.
I think Carrie, what she does need to get over as a sex columnist is her displeasure at talking dirty.
Yes.
Because, you know, so she was really putting all her chips on the idea that Berger is like a visual learner. He is somebody who's very visually stimulated. Whereas I think some people are more audio-based, you know, and like to hear some... It doesn't need to be pure filth, but just a bit of suggestive chat.
Yeah.
A bit of just wait till I get you home level stuff, kind of.
And I like to think that we're perhaps moving away now from, like, the... It's very, like, paint-by-numbers, what turns men on is sexy shoes and sexy lingerie. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that does turn some straight men on. But it's a whole spectrum.
Well, we've had 25 years of broadband now, so I'm not sure a Marabou trim pump is going to do it anymore. You've got men watching women eat shit out of a cup or whatever that video was. What was it? Two girls, one cup?
Two girls,
you know,
one
I think
cup.
I think it's... Well, the world, the internet, broadband has damaged the world now. And I think actually the idea of wearing a Marabou pump,
it's very quaint,
isn't quite
it?
On the same level as watch a woman shove a squid inside her mimsy or some whatever ridiculous nonsense you can get on the internet, kind of sort of tentacle porn or some shit. I don't know. Gosh, now there's a question. What turns humans on? An infinite question.
Yeah, and it changes as well. For me, anyway, it's situational. It's depends on anything from, like, how much energy I have to what I've been watching on TV that day, who the other person is. Like, it's so random. And I think that's what I was trying to say, actually, about the Marabou pumps. Like, you can't just... Samantha's advice was bad in that she was like, oh, honey, like, get this sexy underwear and these Marabou pumps and it'll be fine. Like, no, that's not a comprehensive enough answer.
No. And I think it's crushing when you've met someone that you think could really be something and then the sex is shit.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and there's probably a lot more than those two that I've forgotten, because to be honest, I probably did end things because of that. Mm. I'm sure I did when I was dating, kind of. Because especially when I was in my 20s and I wasn't ready to sort of make compromises of any sort, to be perfectly honest. Sex was way too big a compromise for me. But again, I'm not going to apologize for that because I was in my 20s. And that's what you're meant to do in your 20s, I think. Shop around. So I did.
Yeah. 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 And also, like, it's not the... it certainly shouldn't be the absolute clincher, I don't think.
No.
But it's also is important if you're both sexual people. It's kind of an essential, really, component to a relationship.
It's unavoidable, and we've said this before on the podcast, which is even if you're in a relationship with someone who's asexual, if you're both asexual, there is still a conversation to be had about being asexual. The topic of sex is unavoidable whether you're having sex or not. So you'd be, I think, very naive to think that sex isn't going to factor into your relationship regardless of the sort of the terms and conditions of your individual relationship. And I fully agree. I think Carrie's right in that she does tell Samantha, I think we're getting a bit old to jump for the dump. And actually, as I went through my 30s, sex became less of a consideration as I realised, having had a lot of sex, that actually, you know, it's much of a muchness, really, isn't it? Nobody has invented a new way of doing sex since humans were created. You know, so it's like nothing is going to shock me anymore. I put the squid inside my body and it's there now. You know, so it's kind of, so then it, as I moved from my 30s, other things became more important.
Yeah.
So I can see why Carrie wants to persist with Berger, especially if she thinks, I think, it's been a long time since Carrie has felt this way. And so I think she's willing to kind of explore. And I think that's the right thing for her to do. And sure enough, maybe it was just in the end, it was a really simple answer. Berger likes morning sex.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Which, as we know from this podcast, I do not. I'm fully against morning sex.
Yeah, this podcast is against morning sex.
Anti-morning sex.
That's the hill that we're going to die on.
Groggy, horrible.
Smelly breath.
I want a cup of coffee. Smelly breath. The day is beginning and I want to see what the day has to offer.
Not afternoon. I think I said before, afternoon is the sweet spot for me.
I do. Okay, I'm going to... Having just literally been on a rant, past 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
I would take applications past 11 o'clock.
Yeah. In fact, maybe 11 o'clock is perfect because you've had your breakfast already. Mm-hmm. You've had time to kind of get yourself. Should we have a break?
And we do. So we need, when we come back, we've got to think about a really difficult question, which is going to be really hard to answer, which is, why is it always something?
Yeah.
That's a really generic question, Carrie, thanks. We'll speak to you in a couple of minutes. Bye!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello. Welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. We are on season 6, episode 2, Great Sexpectations. I don't think we said that yet.
No.
And we've already dealt with Carrie and Berger's shit sex.
Yeah.
But Carrie this week asks the question, why is it always something? Why is it always something?
So she prefaces the question by saying, if it's not the sex between me and you, then someone has to become a Jew. Why is it always something? So is she saying... Is it about compromise, I guess?
I think, as Romeo and Juliet said, the course of true love never did run smooth.
Yeah.
And I think the point that Carrie's making is that wouldn't it be nice if you could just meet someone and there wasn't a ridiculous obstacle? And I think after 6 years of Sex in the City, there's almost something quite knowing about Carrie acknowledging the necessary narrative obstacle.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, there's always been an obstacle, whether it's Big's inability to commit, Aiden's over keenness to commit, Berger turns out to be psychotic.
Yeah.
Harry turns out to be Jewish. And so I suppose that's the point she's getting at, which is why does there always have to be an obstacle?
Yeah.
Is how I read it. And yet for Carrie and Berger, everything was going fine until it came to sex. And for Charlotte and Harry, surprisingly, everything was going swimmingly until Harry drops the bomb that he can only get serious with a woman who is Jewish.
Yeah. But then firstly, I liked this storyline this week between Charlotte and Harry. But I also... do not know enough about Jewish culture to know how accurate and or offensive the references and portrayals of Jewish culture were. So if we have any Jewish listeners, I'd love to hear from them.
Absolutely. The DMs are wide open. Dylan and I, we started recording just after Christmas, so we're in a bit of a post-Christmas slump. But we're starting to round up our guests.
Yes.
For season 6, and we will be speaking to some of our Jewish pals to see if they would like to come on and screen Charlotte's conversion to Judaism for accuracy and offensiveness. Because you're right, neither of us are Jewish, so yeah. I don't know if it's accurate or... sensitive, if I'm honest. I think the conversation that I'd be really interested to have is almost not so much about Judaism, but about media portrayal of Judaism.
Yeah.
Which is, it's kind of presented, even at this episode, obviously we've got that music which starts the second steps on screen. You know, it feels like they're almost presenting the Jewish faith as something with a heavy dose of mysticism.
Yes.
And I think, you know, when we were in a Catholic church last season for Brady's baptism, there wasn't that sense of, like, slight, almost supernatural overtures, kind of like Charlotte's entering something ancient and bewitching.
Mystical, yeah. It's interesting. You're so right. And it reminds me of, I've been rewatching Homeland recently, and literally, like, whenever Claire Danes steps into a mosque, that, like... the sitar of, I'm not sure what instrument it is, but you know the instrument, like that Hollywood loves.
Like the minuet, almost like the morning call to prayer starts to happen.
That Hollywood loves to use, or like TV shows loves to use, like as soon as someone's in the Middle East or in a mosque, that's like, and it always has sort of a slightly ominous minor key to it as well.
It feels like the Jewish faith is being very othered.
Mm.
I think there's a real sense of othering around Jewishness.
And I imagine in New York, like, it's not particularly mysterious. Like, surely
no,
everyone
my God.
Knows about
and
Jewish
lest
culture.
We forget, Charlotte shagged a Hasidic Jew on the floor of his studio.
Yeah.
This is not Charlotte's first Jewish boyfriend.
It's
so
not.
It's kind of, this should not be surprising. But it's interesting as well to reframe Charlotte's conversion through a modern lens of I strongly suspect, although again we need to run this past one of our Jewish friends, is now feels more anti-Semitic than 2003 when this episode aired. Or is it? Or is it just that we're now having a conversation about anti-Semitism in a way that I don't think we were in 2003, especially post 9/11, where the conversation was very much on Islamophobia. So I wonder if, from a cultural standpoint, now. And it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if I'm just like that picks up on this as well. If we are living in more troubled times for the Jewish faith. More to come. And like I said, please, to our listeners who are Jewish, please let us know what you think, because you'll be no doubt very familiar with the Charlotte plotline. And obviously it's going to run for the next sort of 7 or 8 weeks. So we've got plenty of time to discuss it.
I really loved Charlotte. And it was so Charlotte, like when she went to the synagogue and spoke to them. Was he like a, like just someone who worked?
Like a janitor there, or something, yeah.
And she was like, Shalom. And then at the end, like saying Amen at the end of the... like at the dinner that they were having.
The Shabbat dinner, yeah.
Yeah, the Shabbat.
And as well, do you know what's so funny? Because at the moment I'm watching season 3 of Emily in Paris.
Yeah.
And the parallels between Emily Cooper, as played by Lily Collins, and Charlotte York, as played by Kristen Davis, really uncanny. Just that sense of wide-eyed, kind of sweet, but kind of means it, so you can't be mad at them. Like, you can't be mad at Charlotte for thinking, this is what I do know, I'm Jewish.
I am.
Shalom.
Someone said something, there's a TV podcast that I listen to where they just talk about, like, new releases and stuff. And one of the presenters asked the other one, who's a big fan of Emily in Paris, he asked her if she could sum it up in one word, and she said, evil. She was like, it's evil, and I love it.
The hold that show has on me, and again, I'm sure if you're a Sex and the City fan, it's a Darren Star created show. It's like Sex and the City. In fact, it's quite like season 6 in that both feet have completely left reality. You know, Emily Cooper is living in a version of Paris, even more ridiculous than Carrie Bradshaw's version of Manhattan. No poverty, no people of colour, no depression, no sweary traffic jams, nothing. Just a strange Disneyland version of a city. No social housing anywhere in sight. Everyone lives in a beautiful old historical building. Just insanity. But
not a banlieue in sight.
Just sort of like, there's something about sort of Charlotte's kind of wide-eyed sort of innocence that's very Emily in Paris. Emily in Paris, to give it its proper title. That's really what it's meant to be called. You're meant to pronounce it Emily in Paris.
Ugh, all right.
It's not to rhyme. So yes, I love her crashing the Shabbat dinner and then trying to get out of it to go meet Harry. Yeah. I'm sorry, I've
like
plans.
Oh, I actually have to go. Yeah.
And I thought to drop off the wine.
I thought the other ladies were like a bit shitty when she told them. Like, I feel like they weren't supportive enough. Like Charlotte was
That's
like,
"That's what Max said." Yeah, Max was like, "This is very strange. Like, are they making fun of her?"
Yeah.
And the way I read that scene was that Charlotte's made it into this really big thing. And to them, it's just like...
Well, they're like, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, okay, like, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That's how I interpreted that scene, which is for Charlotte, this is a huge deal. Whereas for Carrie, it's just like... Yeah,
what, sure.
You know, last year, Samantha was a lesbian for 3 weeks. Yeah. Like, we don't judge here.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I did love it. I think... It does, the conversion storyline does go on for weeks and weeks, but it'll be interesting to see if we are looking, if this is classic woke Charlotte territory, of are we looking at cultural appropriation? But I do wonder, I think this episode, maybe not so much latter episodes, but this episode, it seems to acknowledge that Charlotte is a Jenny come lately, in that she fully expects that she can just waltz into a faith that she hasn't been raised a part of.
Yeah.
And again, I'm sure as we go on, we can talk about Judaism as an ethno faith, an ethno culture, which goes beyond just being like a religion. So anyway, let's move on. I think, which is my favourite plot line, I've just been dying to get to this bit, which is Samantha and Raw. Should we say, we'll save Steve-O and TiVo till last.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to talk about Raw forever, which I'm obsessed with everything about this plot line.
Just so many...
You know somebody went to that restaurant as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And like I've been to iterations of that restaurant. I went to one... in Borough called Turnips, which was like...
I beg your fuck, what?
It was actually really good, which is why I think the ladies were being a bit small-minded by just automatically dismissing raw food. I don't know, am I showing myself as like a pretentious foodie here? Just so many amazing Samantha lines. I'd like him to amuse my bouche. I'm gonna need a napkin to dry off my
cold,
seat.
But the yes, that was my favorite. Yes. So do you want to do that one again, but clean, without me talking over the top of it?
Okay. I'm gonna need a napkin to dry off my seat.
Yes, that was the best one. She's flooded her basement, Ginger Minge style. I loved it so much, and I love her confidence, which is, I'm sleeping with that hot waiter tonight. He doesn't know it yet.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I wish. I don't think I've ever entered an establishment with that level of certainty. Someone to know that will make a man come as soon as he sees me.
And then the shop assistant's like, got it. Just doesn't bat an eyelid. I think my favourite moment is when that other woman, Samantha's main competitor. So Samantha realises, just to remind listeners, but the reason this restaurant is popular is not because of the raw vegan food, but because of the hot waiter. And she's in competition with all these other women who are suffering through these disgusting, like, lemongrass shots and, like...
Mushroom tea.
And it comes down to Samantha and one other very stunning, striking woman.
It was very transsexual energy. I loved her. There was something a little bit drag about her. That
yes.
I just really liked.
Very striking. I know what you mean. Yeah, very striking. And then Samantha like marches over to her and is like, look, I'll buy you dinner if you give me this one. And the woman looks like she's going to retaliate. And then she's just like, ugh, okay. which I really enjoyed.
You have no idea who you're dealing with, as Samantha says. Yeah. Maybe she did. Maybe the other woman was like, and from across the bar, I saw her. Samantha Jones, the most legendary shagger in all of Manhattan. And I would win. No, I wouldn't.
No.
Good night. I'm going home. What was it? Key lime custard.
Key lime custard. Yeah.
Oh, they're quite hard to make vegan. Custard is not an easy one to make without eggs.
Yeah, so, and then maybe. Miranda and Carrie were talking about ravioli, vegan, dairy-free ravioli. And I was like, how did they make ravioli without cooking anything? Because you would have to cook the dough.
That's what I'm going to say. Ravioli. How would you make pasta? Now, there's one for the chefs. We would like Jewish people and chefs to DM us, please. How would you make raw, uncooked ravioli?
Is it possible?
Although, nothing served above 118 degrees. So possibly could you... No, because you have to boil pasta.
Yeah, so it would have to be above 100... Well, Fahrenheit is. What was I going to say? Yeah, and then so Samantha and Smith Jared spend all night having sex, which is like possibly one of the most explicit sex scenes that has been in Sex and the City. When it suddenly came on, I was like, oh wow, like this is everything.
Max was quite confused by a couple of them, and to be honest, yeah.
the when they're like bum to bum, and she's like sort of got her bum in the air. And then he's sitting on her
bum. And he sort of sat on her.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the one. That was the one where Max was like, huh.
How does that work? I was going to say as well, this is the first time they kind of make a point of there are condom wrappers everywhere. And then
yes.
Samantha has one stuck to her arm. I thought that was interesting.
And I suspect it's because they use the word raw, which obviously has
double
connotation. And so I think... You know, that was somebody at HBO was like, we can't suggest. Although it's interesting how far we've come in 4 years, because of course in season two, Samantha kind of admits she doesn't always use condoms. I'm thinking about when she goes for her STI test and she says yes to lambskin and latex condoms. Yes. So I wonder if it was purely because they'd use the word raw. So they had to make doubly sure.
I bet you're right. I bet that's it.
And I think that's important. I think this was an age, we were immediately post HIV and AIDS. The show was created by a gay man. It was executive produced and directed, written by gay men. You know, this was years before PrEP. It was, PrEP was a dream. PrEP was a dream that did not exist back then. So, you know, it would have been, you know, don't get me wrong, I think that gay men have been much more switched on about condom use for years. And I know a lot of straight people, even when I was at college, straight men and straight women were just like, oh, they don't really use condoms, they're on the pill. And I'm like, well, that'd be a fucking luxury, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But no, I think, yes, well done. Safe sex message, well done. Not raw. Raw food, not raw sex. There's my new slogan, I guess. But I do love, and I love, Smith Gerrard is such an interesting creation, and he's a very slow burn character. He's really interesting. The actor is obviously called...
Jason Lewis.
He gives a subtle performance. I'm going to say that I think it's deliberate. you know, he's not trying the way that Berger is trying, that way. And so he's a very sort of interestingly chill foil for Samantha.
Yeah.
And I look forward to getting to know him. Let's wind up with Miranda, Steve-O, Tiva, and poor little Magda. She did not mean to sit on the remote.
Some things, like a broken TiVo, can be repaired. Others, like a broken heart, are a little more complicated.
Now, you see, my heart goes out to Miranda on this, because I can maintain vague sanity in public places if I'm allowed to have full-scale emotional breakdowns when household appliances don't work.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, that's where I channel a lot of my insanity, which is, like, why isn't the Christmas tree coming on? Why is the toaster inexplicably just burning one side of the toast? And I get really, really cross about those things. So I can understand why Miranda, who has to pretend to be a civil human being all day long, why she has a full-on breakdown when Jules and Mimi gets erased. Which is really brings me to the point, which is all I really wanted to talk about, which is Jules and Mimi, which is one of my all-time favourite fake shows within a show.
So can I just say, if Jules and Mimi was real, I would fully watch it.
Yeah, I still would. Although, do you know what? And I still can't forgive it that this is a show that's meant to be set in London.
Oh.
Where they've not run it past a native English person, have they?
Yeah.
Because we do not have problems with our heat. We have problems with our heating.
And also, Miranda says he's a black guy from Brixton. She's a white woman from Hampstead Heath, which... You would say Hampstead. Like, I was a bit like, does she live in the bushes? Or, like, in the pergola?
It's her and George Michael in 2003.
And also, those actors are American. Like, when she's...
Yes. When... So I just wish... All I can think is that one of their writers had spent time in the UK and maybe watched an episode of Cold Feet.
Or something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Something like, because weirdly, because, and it also looks like an American TV show. It doesn't look, when you think that this was airing at the same time as Spaced.
Yeah.
Like, Spaced looks thoroughly English. If you cut Spaced down the middle, it bleeds English comedy.
Yeah.
Weird, surreal, cerebral genius.
Yeah.
Whereas Jules and Mimi looks like Will and Grace. So it's got that kind of American gloss kind of.
And also, there's something very specific to British sitcoms in particular of a certain time, where like the indoor quality when they're inside, clearly on like a set or a soundstage, is quite crisp, and then when they go like outside for like a garden scene, it's like you're watching something from like the 1970s. I don't know why, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's really bizarre. I really noticed it in like Keeping Up Appearances, whenever she's like trimming her hydrangeas or whatever. It's like really grainy and weird. But yeah, I love...
God, that's so depressing. I wish we'd had Jules and Mimi. I would have lived... I mean, I'm not sure. It feels like the divide between Hampstead and Brixton is something they've Googled. So they've Googled posh part London.
Yeah.
Poor part London.
It's very
obvious.
Of course,
now, in 2023... Brixton, about as gentrified as London can get, which is a real shame. I think they should do, oh my God, in And Just Like That, there should be a joke about a reboot of Jules and Mimi. Like, Miranda gets really excited because they've rebooted Jules and Mimi as Mimi and Jules for the 23rd century. And it's about how Mimi inadvertently gentrified Brixton.
Oh my
by
God.
Opening her hat shop in Brixton.
Oh my God. And the two, and Idris Elba and Kristen Scott Thomas could guest star as Jules and Mimi in the...
Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Idris Elba.
That'd be, I mean, again, I would fully watch that show. I think I loved it as well because I have a real affinity with, I do like a trashy like BBC drama or sitcom. I love a bit of, have you heard of Death in Paradise?
I have, Dylan.
I love a bit of Death in Paradise.
I don't know where this is going, but...
not so much now, but it used to be my, like, calming down show. And it's just, I know it's trash, but, like, that's my Jules and Mimi, I think.
What's my Jules and Mimi? Obviously, as somebody who appeared in 7 episodes of Holby City, I'm not going to speak ill of Death in Paradise. what is my weirdest, most unexpected TV moment? I tell you what, The Apprentice.
Oh, wow.
12 years that show has been on TV and I still cannot get enough. I will watch it. And it's, do you know what it is? It's the formula.
Yeah.
Which is, I think I love anything that has it, which is why, I mean, I watched all 23 seasons of America's Next Top Model. I love, you know, I'm a very thinky person. So if a TV show allows me to completely switch my brain off, that gives me an hour where I'm not haunted by the thoughts in my head.
Totally. I mean, yeah. As we said before, I mean, this is product placement pretty blatantly. But as always, Cynthia Nixon gives it her all. And it's just so entertaining when, like, she's on the phone and she's like, you told me to do that already. What is wrong with you? To the people trying to fix it.
Like, Cynthia Nixon acting to nothing
is
better
literally.
Than most people acting with other people.
Literally.
And as well, it's fair. She had a big episode last week. It was Charlotte and Samantha's turn. They needed something to do this week. So there we are. So why is it always something? Well, for narrative terms, it would be a very boring TV show if there were not obstacles that had to be overcome. You can imagine just in season one, and then I met a really nice man, and we got married.
And it was fine.
Bum, 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 bum.
And that's part of the problem in, like, the first movie.
Well, that there's no obstacles.
Yeah, but then they create... Like, I feel like they were really struggling to find obstacles in, like, the first movie, so they were like, let's have big...
I'd say it's even worse in the second one, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. Although, again, that's the least of its troubles. But,
I was thinking, like, for me, often there actually isn't always something, and it's usually, a lot of the time, it's fine. But that's because I'm not in a fictional character in an HBO show, so...
I think, for me, the notion that for love to be valid, it had to have obstacles was part of a problem for me in my 20s, which was if it came too easily, I was suspicious of it. And I think actually I really wanted the drama. And I met some really nice guys in my 20s where, because there weren't any obstacles, it felt like it was moving too fast and I panicked and bolted a little bit. Whereas as I moved into my 30s, again, the guys that I've dated, it's just been so easy because I've gotten really good at weeding out guys who are going to sprinkle obstacles in your path. Because I think sometimes if a partner is conjuring these obstacles, you know, like, oh, I can't introduce to my parents because they don't like trans people. You know, oh, my friends don't like you because you're rich and they're not. It's just, oh, fuck off then. Just fuck off. No one has time for this drama. Like, thank you, next. And yeah, it can be frustrating when these problems reveal themselves, you know, but it's kind of, you just work through it. You know, why is it always something? Well, welcome to relationships. There's always going to be negotiations, whether it's with your family or your friends or with your partners. There's always going to be some sort of negotiation, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
So just deal with it, Caroline. Just deal with it and get drunk and put your boobs on a table.
Have a frozen margarita. Fall out of a cab. It'll all be fine.
It's all going to be fine. Next week is a really boring episode. I'm warning you now, everyone. Next week, literally a sound machine dominates the plot. So is it always something?
The Sex in the City episode is boring. Our episode is not going to be boring.
Oh yeah, we're going to slap. We are somehow Dylan and I are going to make a Sharper Images sound machine. Amazing. We're going to make frog noises each. It's going to be really good. Please don't stop listening to our podcast. Until next week, stay safe. And don't spill salt on your bed sheets because it's a bad look.
Bye.
Right, bye for now. Bye.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.